All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Ayin Heyom Adbet after the Mishnah. Gemara is going to discuss some of the derivatives that come out of the Mishnah, which have major implications in terms of kashrut. The first one is itmar cham l'tocham. If you have a hot object that goes into another hot object, divrei hakol asur. Everybody agrees there that there's transference of flavor, and you have a problem. Tzonein l'toch tzonein. You have a cold item to another cold item, divrei hakol mutar. Over there, everybody says we're fine because there you don't have transference of flavor because it's cold. Both objects are cold. Question comes up is cham l'toch tzonein, v'tzonein l'toch cham. If you have a hot item going into a cold item, or a cold item going into a hot item. The problem being, and this is the machloket here between Rav and Shmuel, is which one takes precedence over here? You could look at hot and cold items coming together, they're going to end up being warm, somewhere in the middle. Question is, what's happening? Is the cold item cooling down the hot item, or is the hot item warming up the cool item? Probably the truth is, probably both. But here, the positions of the Amoraim take a position as to which one is taking precedence. Rav Amar, Ilo Gavar, the upper one, whatever's on top, takes precedence. So Shmuel Amar, Tata Gavar, that the bottom one takes precedence. That means that if you have a cold item dropping into a hot item, so according to Shmuel, there would be transference of flavor because the bottom item takes precedence, it's hot. So therefore, it's transferring flavor into the cold item. In essence, it's heating up the cold item. On the other hand, Rav, who believes Ilo Gavar, that the upper one takes precedence, since it's a cold item going to the hot item, the cold item is cooling down the hot item, and therefore there is no transference of flavor, according to Rav.
It's hot and cold.
Hot, in general, is yad soled bo, which is the general definition of hot in the Gemara for the transference of flavor. What's interesting over here is, we have a general principle in Aloha, which is when you have Rav and Shmuel arguing, by Yisurei, the Aloha is like Rav, and by Mamomon, then the Aloha is like Shmuel. Despite that fact, Rashi says over here, "Be'afagav dehilchato kerav bi'isurei." Even though generally halacha is like Rav, b'ha hilchato kishmuel. Over here, the halacha is like Shmuel. The ha tanya tarte matnitan kavate. We're gonna have two brightot that come up later in the Gemara that support the position of Shmuel. And so, because of that, we paskin like Shmuel. In addition to that, the Rabbeinu Chananel adds on that Rav Huna and Rava defend the position of Shmuel. So now you're talking about a moraim that are batra. So they also have precedence in terms of halacha. So therefore, the halacha is going to be like Shmuel, which is that tata gavar. Now, the Gemara deals with our Mishnah in this context. Tan, nataf, mirotvo, alacheres. If some of the juices, the gravy, drips off of the Karban Pesach onto the wall of the furnace, v'chazari lav, and then it returns to it, itolet mikomo. You have to remove its place. Kasal kadatcha. Let's understand what happened here. We're talking about a furnace, the wall is cold or cool. So Bishlam of the Rav, according to Rav, that makes sense, the Mar Yilo Gavar, that which is on top, takes precedence. Bishum Achi Tolet Mikomo. Therefore, you take off that location where it falls, meaning you have to take off the area plus what's been absorbed into it, because the Azal Rotev, the gravy went, Miratech Le Lecheres. It heats up the wall of the furnace, because it's on top. It's the item that's going to be on top, and therefore it heats the Cheres. V'hadar Cheres, Miratech Le Lerotev. And then the cheres itself, after it's been heated by the gravy, it goes back and cooks the gravy, which is the problem here, because it's cooked ayudei davar acher and ayudei aish. V'chi ada rotev apesach, and then when the gravy goes back to the pesach, kamatavei pesach machmat chamitudo de cheres. And now it's roasting the karmen apesach from something not heated by the fire, because it's heated by the wall of the furnace now. And now you have a problem. Rachman Amar Tzliyesh, below Tzliy Machmat Tachar Acher. It has to be roasted by fire and not by anything else. So Rav's position, we understand. El Lishmuel, Damar Tatagavar, that the lower one always takes precedence. Cheres, given its own name, since the Cheres is cold, Akure Maker lay the rotev. Instead, it should be cooling off the gravy. The gravy that falls on it, it should be cooled by the cooler wall. So Amayitola Mikamo. If that's the case, you don't have a transference of flavor, plus it's cooling it off. That means that the item's not heating back or giving back, cooking the rotev itself. Mar says, "Kedama Rabbi Yirmiyah Mishmuel." Like Rabbi Yirmiyah Mishmuel says, "Besolet rotechet." That's going to be the answer to our next question in the Gemara. So like they say over there, that we're talking about hot flour. Hachanami becheres roteach. Here we're talking about the wall is hot. I mean, the assumption of the Gemara, and you know already by the time the Gemara says kasal kedatcha, we thought, and then it asks the question. You know that in order to avoid the question, you just do not have to assume what they assume. They assumed that the wall of the furnace was cool. The answer is, if the wall of the furnace is hot, then it doesn't make a difference, because then when the gravy hits the wall, it doesn't matter if you la gavar or tata gavar, you have two out of height items hitting each other. There's clearly going to be transference of flavor, but also a problem of the wall cooking the gravy, and then the gravy returning to the Korban HaPesach and cooking the Korban HaPesach. I agree. It seems to me that unless it's either way in the beginning or way at the end, when the fire is either come down or just started, then you could have it heated by the fire and not the wall being hot. So generally, you would assume that the wall would be the same as the fire, and so that makes a lot of sense here that we're talking about a hot wall of the furnace. The next case is Nataf Mirotvo ala Solet. They have flour that's sitting down at the base, I think, of the furnace, it seems like, and then some of the gravy drops into it. You have to take out that place from down below. Because the gravy heats up the solet. The hadar hudrene. Hadar hudrene is, it's cyclical. So now, it heats up the flour. The flour around it gets heated up. And then, and then the flour goes back and heats the gravy. And then the rotev gets cooked because of the heat of the solet. Now the rotev is cooked for something besides fire. It's the heat of the flour itself. And because of that, it's problematic. So that makes sense according to Rav. According to Shmuel, it says that the bottom one takes precedence. Solet given to its own entity. Since the solet is cool, it's going to cool down the gravy that fell into it. So we have to take it off. There's no absorption here. You could just take off the top of the area, just slice it up. It should be fine. So here's the original statement. We're talking about very hot flour. It seems to be that they used flour to absorb either flavor or gravy, things that spilled out of the cooking that was in the oven in the furnace. So if the solet is in there, it's going to take on the properties of the furnace. It's going to become hot. Right. It's either an insulator. I thought it was used for absorption, meaning that for things that fall out, that it captures it. No, because we're talking about mei peirot. So then you have to decide whether mei peirot or machmitz or machmitz.
This is mei peirot. Where's the peirot coming?
It's not water. It's oil. Whatever's coming out of the animal is not pure water. It's oil, shemen. It has a status of mei peirot. The fat. So then you have to decide what the impact of that is. According to most of the Mishonim, that can't be machmitz. So there's no problem with chametz, except for Rashi. Rashi is the one exception to that rule. Alright, Tznan. Sachu b'shemen shel truma. This is our mission. If you based it with shemen of truma. Im chaburat kohanim yochlu. If it's a chaburat kohanim, they can eat it. Im shel Yisrael. If it's just Yisraelim who can't have truma, then chayhu, if it's still raw, yedichenu, you can just rinse it off. Im tzlihu, if it's roasted, then yiklo vet achitzon. Then you have to take off the outer layer. Now, bishlam odarav damar yilo gavar. So according to Rav, we have the log of our amatul hachi. That's why we have the locha here, the sagi lebi klipa, that you just have to peel off the outer layer. Mishum de ilat sonenhu. The oil is cold. It's going onto the roasted item. So if you log of our, all you have to worry about is the absorption on the outer layer. You don't have to worry about it being absorbed internally. Elo de shmuel damar tata gavar. But Shmuel, who says that the bottom one takes precedence, came in de chamhu mivlo bolo. Since it's hot, it should absorb. Why is it just an klipa? It should be absorbed deeply into the animal. It's deeply into the animal. Now you have a tarovet. You really have a problem, and then Yisrael should not be able to eat it. We're talking about shemen shel truma. Shemen shel truma is coming as a derivative of some product, whether it's corn, whatever the item was that they made the oil from. And now you have that item garment joined together with the garment of Pesach. The garment of Pesach should no longer be edible for a Yisrael because it's got truma inside of it. It's interesting that the basting of the oil on top of the animal was very minimal. So since it was so minimal, there's not enough oil to be absorbed deep into the animal. So that's why Gedei Kalipa is enough, not only for Rav, but even for Shmuel, because there's just not enough oil to be absorbed and deeply penetrate into the animal. And that's why you only have to take off the top layer. Danyo kavate de Shmuel. So now here, this is what Rashi mentioned before. We have these brightot that support the position of Shmuel, which is chamatoch chamasur, chen sonen shentanatoch chamasur. If you have hot into hot, it's asur. And so too, cold into hot is asur. So here, hot is tata. Tata gvar means that the bottom is taking precedence. That's the position of Shmuel. Chamatoch sonen, on the other hand, if you have hot into cold, the tzonein, the tzonein, or cold into cold, mediach. You just have to rinse it off. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute. Cham letoch tzonein, mediach. Hot into cold, you're mediach. Came into chamhu, adam maker lay, since it's hot, yes, the tata gavar. So the lower item is cold. So that means we're assuming that the cold item is cooling off the hot item. But it takes time. It takes time for you to cool it off. Adam maker lay, yevshar delo balaporta. It has to absorb at least a small amount. So klipa mi ani boy, you should at least need to peel off the outer layer. You can't say that tzonin and tzonin is the same as the acham going into tzonin. Tzonin to tzonin is simply mediach. You simply rinse it off and you have no issues anymore because there was no absorption whatsoever. In the case where you have tzonin in the bottom, acham coming in, even if you say tata gavar, that the tzonin takes precedence and cools it off, nevertheless, you still have to say that it takes time to do it. And since it takes time to do it, then there's at least some absorption, at least a skin layer worth of absorption you need klipa. Eloheima, cham letoch tzonein. So you have to reword the brayta, amen the brayta to read. Cham letoch tzonein. If it's hot into cold, kolef, you peel it off. Tzonein letoch tzonein, mediach. Cold into cold, you do mediach. So what's interesting here, in the end, is that Rashi says the brayta's support for Shmuel is what shows us that Aloch is like Shmuel. But the brayta itself is not even a clean brayta in the sense it has to be amended to deal with it. It's a brayta mishabeshta to start with. But despite that fact, since we are able to amend it and get it to work, therefore it's pretty clear from the brayta that whatever's on the bottom is better, and that's tata gavar like Shmuel. Tanya idach, we have another brayta that supports Shmuel, basar roteach, shenaflu l'toch chalav roteach, hot meat into hot milk, v'chein tzonein shenafal l'toch cham, or cold into hot, asur, cham l'toch tzonein. On the other hand, hot into cold, v'tzonein l'toch tzonein, mediach, they just have to rinse it off. So again, the Gemara asks the same question. Cham l'toch tzonein, mediach, kev into chamu, since it's hot, at the maker lay, while in the cooling process, yev shar d'lo balapurta, it has to absorb something. Klipa mi ani boy, it should at least need a skin's worth to be taken off. Eleima, you have to say, cham letoch tzonein kolef, hot into cold, you peel off. Tzonein letoch tzonein, cold into cold, mediach, you simply rinse it off, which is the halacha. Amamar, tzonein letoch tzonein, mediach, cold into cold, you just have to rinse it off. Amar ravuna lo shanu el shalom melchol. It's only if he did not salt it. Vamelchol, asur. But if he salted it, then it's problematic. Damar Shmuel, meliach harihu kiroteach. So that is because Shmuel says, meliach, salting something has the same effect as boiling it, as heating it up. So since it has the same effect as boiling, there's a transference of flavor because of that. So then, kavush, harihu kimavushal. Pickling something, putting it into vinegar, anything that has the properties of vinegar or brine that has that strength or that pungency to it, stringency, has the same impact as cooking as well. So Amar Rava, Hadamar Shmuel, meliach harihu kiroteach. When we say that salting it has the same din as heating it up, that's only if it's not eaten because of it, it's so salty, and that the salt makes it inedible. But if it's, even it's salty, but not so salty that you wouldn't eat it, that's fine. Now, when I say inedible, it doesn't make it permanently inedible. You have to rinse it down to get the salt off in order to make it edible. But if you would not eat it with the amount of salt that's on it, then that's already considered to be enough salt to be harehu kiroteach. That's what Rashi explains over here is, himlichu arbe ad shemagdiach tamo. He salted it so much until basically its flavor, right, it's ruined the flavor. The point is that the only flavor left is salt. You can't taste what's there. Machmat milchol tzat, because of the salting. Ve'enu ra'ui lo'achlo, elim ken ayamadicho. You can't eat it unless you rinse it off. You rinse the salt off, then you're okay. V'hayen en achal lav the gamrei kamar. When it means you can't eat it, it doesn't mean totally you can't eat it. She'en shum adam yachol lo'achlo. Since you've ruined the flavor, people generally wouldn't eat it because of the amount of salt over there, therefore it's asur. That's what's called salty. It's not that you can't eat it, it's inedible at this point in time. It could be eaten if you rinse it off. So what it means is that the salt's enough there to ruin the underlying flavor. And so because of that, it makes it similar to the case of roteach. So now, how bar gozla, tenafo de kada de kamcho. So they had this young pigeon, this young bird, that fell into a pitcher full of kamcho. As Rashi says, kamcho is kutach bavli, which we bumped into before. It's a dip that was very popular in Bavel, probably wouldn't be so popular today. Involved cheese going bad, stale bread, salt. It was a nice mixture. It was a dip that they used, but it's milchik. That's the main issue here. It's milchik. So you have this bargozla that fell into this milchik dish here. So shayir of chinina braid derava mi pashrunia. That's the gears that we have in our Gemara. You can see on the nusach acher on the side that it might be rav chinina braid derava mi pashrunia. One of those two. Amarova. Man chogim the mishra milto kiha. Who is so wise that he knows how to make this mutar? Ilav rav chinina braid derava mi pashrunina. And same gears issue again. If it weren't for rav chinina, he has that power. The Gavra Rabuhu, he's a big gun, and therefore, he's able to be matir here. Right, for sure. The Gemara in Beitza says, right, we're going to get to that, which is Koach Tehetera Odif. Rashi comments in the beginning of Beitza about Koach Tehetera Odif. Everyone could be Machmir. He says, in order to be Mekil, he says that you really have to have the knowledge or the power to be Mekil. I mean, that takes real limud. That takes real power or strength in limud to be able to be Mekil. So that's what he's saying here. In order for someone here to come and be Matir, that takes someone with real knowledge and real broad shoulders to carry that with him. So Kiyama Shmar Hamiliach Haril Kuroteach. So then Shmuel says, Miliach Haril Kuroteach, Shein Nechal Machmat Milcho. Hi, Nechal Machmat Milcho. So that over here, we're talking about a cold item, we're talking about a cold bird into a cold kutach. And since over here there's salt involved, but there's not enough salt, because the kutach has salt in it, but that's part of the normal flavor of the kutach. It's not salt to the point where it's kuroteach. It's salt to the point that that's the normal way that you would eat this item. And so because of that, therefore there's no problem. Now, hani mile chai, that's only true if the meat is raw. Avat sli by klipa. On the other hand, if the meat is roasted, then you do have to remove the outer layer. This has to do with something that Tosafot mentioned yesterday. If you look in the Tosafot on the Ayin Hay Amud Bet, it says, v'mtzlihu yiklofet achitzon, b'chol inyan mairi, ben cham ben soneh, doesn't matter if it's hot or cold, mitokshu rach b'leya, since it's softened. Once you roasted it, the meat has been softened, therefore it absorbs apu pishenu cham, even though it's not hot. So that's what we're saying over here. This is hani mile chai. That's because the bird that fell in was raw. But had the bird been roasted, then you would have had to take it off a kalipa, again, because of its softness, it's more absorptive, and because of that, you would have a problem with the bird. Not because of the maliach, but simply because of the problem that this soft meat now absorbs more. V'lo amran, ela didlit bei pilei. That's only if it doesn't have any cracks in it. Aval ipe pilei asur. If it has cracks in it, then it becomes asur, because then the assumption is that it absorbed much more deeply inside of it, and the tzli is only a klipa when it's a pretty solid piece of meat. If it has cracks, then we're assuming that they went much deeper, and then you have a problem. If it's spiced with spices, asur. And here Rashi makes the comment, bagozo betavle asur, if the bird was in falim, it was in spices, the tavle merachachele, it softens the meat, umaitze, and therefore it draws, ubale the kotcha, and then it pulls in the kutach, and therefore you're going to have a problem because the milk is being drawn into the meat. We said before it was cold. So here you have all these qualifications. The reason it was okay in this case was, number one, it was cold. Number two is it was raw. So since it was cold and raw, when the meat fell into the kutach, we don't worry about that being milchik. That's cold into cold. The salt. Salt was at normal levels of salt that you would find in a dish that you would eat. So that doesn't have the din of meliach harehu kiroteach. So because of that, that's why he was matir. But he gives all the qualifications for that. If anything had been different, it wouldn't have been the case. If the bird was tzli, if the bird had pile, had cracks in it, where it would be absorbed inside of it, if the bird had been marinated or put into spices in any way that softened the bird, all of those would have created problems for you, even though we're talking about tzone in the toch, tzone, even though we're talking about cold into cold. All right, so that's the end of that sugya. Now we move on to another sugya, machloket rav, and Levi over here. There's a machloket about who to paskin like, but this has major ramifications in terms of psak halacha, who we paskin like. Which is, Amarav, basar shchuta shamein, if you have kosher meat that's fatty, shitzalo im basar nevela kachush, you have it in the oven, you have the two pieces of meat on a spit inside the oven, you're roasting them inside the oven. You have kosher meat that's full of fat, and then you have non-kosher meat, nevela kachush, lean, a lean piece of meat there, asur. That's problematic. My taima, mefat me mehadodi. The word pitum or lefateim, one that's used pitum aktoret, but it's also used, the fateim means to fatten an animal up, or to fatten it up, or to feed it. So the pitum and the ingredients is mixing things together. Also over here, mefat mehadodi is that they draw from each other. The flavor is passed back and forth. V'levi amar, afilu basar shkuta kachush, even if the kosher meat is lean, shetzalo im basar nevela shamein, and the non-kosher meat is full of fat, mutar, my daimo. What's the reasoning? Recha ba'al mahu. Recha lav miltahi. We're talking about smell, flavor, intangible item that's moving. That intangible item is not real. And since it's not mamashut, it's not something real, we don't worry about it. So you have a position of Levi, which is recha lav miltahi. When it comes to smell, aroma, that type of movement of flavor, that is not an issue because reach lav miltahi. That's Levi's position. Rav's position is just the opposite, that Reach is a miltahi, and therefore he has a problem. And they show you the, their positions in the extreme. I mean, that Rav's position is that even when the kosher meat is the one that has the shamein, has the fat to it, which is the flavor that's passing, we assume is that if they're in the oven together, the fat moves from the kosher one to the non-kosher and back again. So that's how far Rav says it. And Levi's just the opposite. Levi says, even if the non-kosher meat has the fat and the kosher meat is lean, we don't assume that the flavor is moving from the non-kosher meat because reach lav miltahi. We've seen their positions in the extreme on both directions. Rav believes there's reach miltahi, and Levi believes reich has lav miltahi. Aved Levi uvda, reish gadluta. Levi paskin based on his position in the Azareish Galuta, Bigdi b'davar acher. They were cooking in the same oven. Can you imagine this? A goat and a pig in the same oven. And he said, totally mutar. No problem. The kosher goat remains kosher. Not an issue at all. You're not allowed to cook, roast two psachim in the same oven because of the mixing. My love, tarovet ta'amim. That it's the mixing of the flavors. You don't want two psachim in there and the mixing of the flavors, because then you'll have it nechal shalolim nuyav. You have the owners. Owners must eat the gorman ha-pesach. If the flavor is exchanging, then you have a problem, because now each one of them is eating a gorman pesach that includes flavor from the other gorman ha-pesach. So that seems to be what the problem is. Bekasha the Levi. That'll be a problem for Levi, because over here we seem to say recha miltahi. That it is. The flavor passing is an issue. Lo, mebnei tarovet gufin. The real issue here is that you'll really mix them up. You'll mix them up physically. You'll get the wrong one, and you'll give the wrong one to the wrong chabura. Hachanami mistavro. That makes sense. Bekdani seifa filu gdiv letzleh. Even if one of the Karbanei Pesach is a goat, and the other one is a lamb, Yamart bishlama b'pnei gufin. If you say that the problem here is gufin, haynu d'tani afilu gdi etzleh, then you would say, even a gdi etzleh, what you would think, don't get mixed up. Nevertheless, the writer says, problematic. Even though it's a gdi etzleh. Eli yamart b'pnei tarovet, tamim ali gdi etzleh. If you're talking about the problem is tarovet tamim, mixing of the flavors, then what's the difference between gdi and tleh, or tleh and tleh, or gdi and gdi? Afilu makes no sense. Malik gdi ugdi, ela, mai, al korchach mivnei tarovet gufin, hu da asur. So it's tarov gufim that's asur. About tarov tamim, shari. But when it comes to mixing of flavors, it wouldn't be an issue at all. So let me dive into yuftei the rav. Now we turn it on its head. Before we thought it was a problem for Levi, now we say, wait, the right way to explain it is like Levi, which is it shtei gufim. Now maybe it's a problem for Rav. How come the Breita doesn't entertain the problem of the tarovet of flavors, which for Rav would be a serious issue? So I'm Rabbi Yirmiyahu, who by a skin and gun should salob shtei gderot. Put it into two pots. It says shtei gderot, sakadatka. How could you have the Pesach in two pots? You don't cook a Pesach, you roast a Pesach. There are no pots here at all. Ela ema ke'en shtei gderot. It's in an oven that's like being in two different pots. V'achi kamar, ain't so lin shnei psachim ke'achad. You can't put two psachim in the same oven, mipnei tarovet. My tarovet, what tarovet we're talking about here? Tarovet tamim. That's a flavor passing. That's for Rav, reich milti. V'afilu ke'en shtei gderot. Even in a case where it's like two pots, meaning that it's separate, deleket tarovet tamim, that you don't have this problem with the mixing of the flavors. As Rashi says, there's a pile of ashes in between them, or there's something that creates some sort of barrier between them. Then when there's no problem with tarovet tamim, asur mishum tarovet gufin. Then you have a secondary problem of mixing up the actual physical korban pesach. V'afilu gdi utleh. Even a gdi utleh. So he ends off with tarovet gufin, and that's how it fits into the brayta over there. So Rav is able to explain the brayta as being both a problem of tarovet tamim and tarovet gufin. So Amar Rav Mari, ketanae. The machlok between Rav and Levi is similar to a machlok ketanaim. Harudeh pat chama, person who scrapes out hot bread from the oven, v'natna al gabei chavit yain shel truma, places on top of a barrel of wine, but wine that is truma. Rabbi Meir oser, Rabbi Yehuda matir. Rabbi Meir says it's problematic, the bread now becomes truma. Rabbi Yehuda matir says no problem at all. Rabbi Yossi matir b'shel chitin, if it's wheat bread then it's okay. V'oser b'shel sorim, everybody's oser with barley, b'nei shel sorim shel avot. Because the sorim barley draws in the flavor much more than the chitim. My love, tanoihi. Sounds like here we have machloket tanim as to whether recha miltahi, mar sabar, recha lav miltahi. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position. He thinks that reach imparts nothing to the bread. So just because it's sitting on top of a barrel of wine has no impact on the bread itself. So therefore it's okay. Umar sabar recha miltahi. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes it is a problem. So the Levi, Gemara says, according to Levi, vadai tanaihi. According to Levi, he has to explain it as a machloket tanaim, because Levi believes recha lav miltahi. So he can explain himself according to Rabbi Yehuda. But according to the one who says it's a sword, the only way to explain it is to say that he argues and says recha miltahi. But the Rav, neima tanai, let's say according to Rav, it's also machloket tanaim, amar lecha Rav, dugule alma recha miltahi. Everybody agrees that recha miltahi. Lav itmar la. Don't we have a modification or qualification of that statement? Everybody agrees if the bread is hot and the barrel is open, it's asur. So that's Reicha Milti. So Nenet, if the bread is cool, v'chavit migufa, and the barrel is sealed, d'v'yakol mutar. Everybody agrees it's mutar. Lo nechulga, where's their machloket? In the in-between cases, which is elapat chama, you have hot bread, v'chavit chatuma, but there's a cap or there's something on top of the barrel. Or pat sonenet, you're talking about cold bread, v'chavit p'tucha, and the barrel is open. Ha nami, kepat chama, v'chavit tucha dami. In this case, is similar to a case of pat chama, and an open barrel. And everybody would agree that Reicha Milti. Everybody would agree that this case is Reicha Milti, and it would be problematic. So now, what's interesting over here, we have Levi has to explain the Mishnah as being a Machloket Tanaim, whereas Rav can explain all of it according to his position. All of Tanaim could fit into his position. So this might have implications in terms of the Halacha. Tani Rav Kana Breid Rav Chinina Saba. So Rav Kana Breid Rav Chinina Saba brought down a Braita, Pat Shafayim Tzli, bread that was cooked together with roasted meat, betanur and one tanur, Asur Lochla B'Kudcha. Can't eat it with milchiks. Because the assumption being that the bread absorbed from the tzli that was there. So since it absorbed from the tzli that's there, it's a problem to eat with milchiks. Hay benita di tava bahade bisra. This fish that was roasted, skewered at the same time as meat was in the oven. Asra Ravi Mefarzakia the mechle begutcha. Ravi Mefarzakia said you can't eat it together with milchiks. Again, the same problem, which is that the absorption of the meat flavor causes you a problem. Marba Ravashi Amar afilu b'milcha nami asura. Forget about milchiks, even with salt. I mean, even just eating it regularly is problematic. Mishum dekasha the reichol the davar achar, because it's bad for the odor of the individual, the breath of the individual, the davar achar. So as she points out, it's problematic for tzarat. There's a number of items here. I want to start with machloket Rav and Levi first to discuss that. Rashi says over here, Af agav dekaima tanae kaveta de Rav, even though the tanaim hold like Rav, hilchata kaveta de Levi. The loch is like Levi against Rav. Why? In the Gemara, in Avodah Zarah, Abai and Rava have a similar machloket. And Rava takes the position similar to Levi. Now when we have machloket Abai and Rava, Aloch like Rava. The Aloch is like Rava. So over here, if Levi, since he aligns with the position of Rava, the Aloch is going to be like Levi. That's the way it's in Shuvah. We don't worry about it. We paskin like Levi, which is Reicha Lav Miltohi. We pass on like Levi that we don't worry about Reach at all. You could cook two pieces of meat. You could have this situation where you have a goat and a pig in the same oven, and there's no problem, because Reach lav milti, it's not an issue whatsoever. Now, what's interesting over here, Rashi says that was the din of the Gaonim. If you look down here in the Rabbeinu Chananel, in the classic Gemaras, it's the third to last line in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he says, Hani kulu karav. Everybody here is passing like Rav. Hilkach karav avdinan. Therefore, we pass on like Rav. These last cases in the Gemara where they're giving Psak Halacha, they're all saying that there was flavor transfer. So they're paskening like Rav. That means they're supportive of Rav's position. Therefore, the Halacha is like Rav. Reino Mishamar, Kaimelan Kalevi. I saw some people say we hold like Levi. Vananan Sliyolan Kavatei. We don't hold like them. Alhilcha took Rav. The Halacha is like Rav. So here you have Rabbeinu Chananel saying the Halacha is like Rav. Rav, she's saying, no, the Halacha is like Levi. And I saw in the Gonim that the Halacha is like Levi. Look at Tosafot. Mikan Posek Rabbeinu Tam Kerav. Because of the same reason that Rabbeinu Chananel gives, which is that the whole end of the Gemara seems to go in like Rav. Paskin like Rav. Therefore, the Halacha is like Rav. So now you have the Balei Tosfot, the Rabbeinu Chananel paskin like Rav. You have Rashi paskin like Levi. You have a Machloket here. Is the Halacha Kirav? Is the Halacha Kalevi? Is Reicha Milti? Or is Reicha Lav Miltohi? Ubetanarim Gidolim. The Rabbeinu Tam has an exception. He says in big ovens, Shalanu, our big ovens, near the Mutu Lafo Lechem Emoto Pashtida. You're allowed to put bread together with pashtida hole, umichuso teitev. They're covered well. Havikein shtei gederot. It's as if it is two different pots. Vafilu pandush sheish lachik, einira l'rabi, sheyasur sheish avir meruba, betanur vahevel mitpashet. We have very large ovens. The air dissipates, and since it dissipates, there's no problem of reicha milta. So here, the Rabbeinu Tam says, first of all, the loch is like Rav, but then he qualifies that and says, that's only in areas where it's tight, where the flavor is going to stay in. If you have the ability for the air to dissipate, then it's not going to be wrong. In our ovens, he says, in our large ovens, it's not an issue because there's no flavor transfer. So it turns out that Poskim, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam Paskin, like Levi, that Reicha is Lav Miltahi, that it's not a problem. But we are Choshesh for the Shita of Rav, both because here you have the Rabbeinu Tam Paskin like him, And we saw the Rabbeinu Chananel passing like him. And so Ramah says that in general we worry about l'chatchila choshesh for recha miltei, but b'diavad, if it's done already, then it's totally fine. Now, what does that mean for us in modern day times? What does that mean for us? So first of all, we have to differentiate, and this is a big issue. We have to differentiate between recha lav miltei. We're talking about flavor, intangible items that are transferring. There's no transference of flavor. We're passing like Levi. And even when we're choshesh for Rav, it's only the chatchila. But steam, if there's some sort of moisture that is moving in the oven, then you have an issue, because now you have a tangible item that's moving in the oven, and there we do believe there's transference of flavor. So because of that, you have to be clear. There's a difference between recha lav miltei and between a steam or something that's liquid that creates a moisture in the oven. There is a clear difference between them. You have three basic shitot, which are the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says we're not even worried about moisture, we don't even worry about steam, but he says recha is miltei. But he says in our ovens, generally, you don't have to worry about it because our ovens ventilate. And since our ovens ventilate, then generally you don't have to worry about it. That's Aruch HaShulchan's best. The Minchas Yitzchak says, the truth is, we don't worry about recha. We do worry about moisture, but I don't know where that threshold is. I don't know when something's called reach and when something's called steam or moisture. So since I don't know that, I'm going to be choshesh in all the cases for that problem of I don't know where that threshold, I don't know where you cross the threshold, because I don't know where you cross the threshold. Therefore, I'm going to worry about any time you put things together, the chatchila, I'm not going to allow you to put anything in together in the oven. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that in our ovens today, in the modern day ovens, that when you cook in those ovens, as long as the item is not liquid, then it doesn't have a problem of recha milta. Therefore, if you have, for instance, you make it a fleishik oven, you can take and cook your lasagna, you can cook in solid milkic items in that oven. We can cook them technically without covering them. As long as it's cooled down, you can cook them in there without covering them. If they are liquid, or they have some sort of very high liquid properties, or they create steam, if he says you can see visibly the steam in there, then for sure it's problematic because you have a fleishik oven with milk. The same would be true the other way around. Obviously, the best thing to do is you have two ovens. But most people don't have that option or don't have the opportunity to have two ovens. In that case, if you cover items, then in general you have no problem at all. If you cover everything that you put in there, then there's no issue at all. If you don't cover items, then you should make it that you cover either milchiks or fleishiks. You should pick one of them to cover, because then you make sure that the oven remains either milchik or fleishik, and then the opposite item you always cover, you're never going to have any question. Now, in the end, the truth is that you actually could cook things in there together. If they are covered, then you could, as you said before, you'd be cooking your macaroni and cheese in the oven. At the same time, you're cooking your deli roll, or eating like a spring mac, chopped meat with noodles. So you're able to put those two items in there together without covering them. I've heard from Rav Willig that he says that that's the case. You don't have to cover them in that case because there's just no liquid. Now, again, the best thing to do is to cover them, because sometimes stuff moves over, spills and stuff like that. But you should pick one. You can keep the oven either milk or fleishik, and then only cover the other item. And the other items you could cook openly in the oven, which is much more mako than we, in generally, are no egg. And you should ask your local rav for the psak halacha that he gives you, but it's pretty clear from the halacha that there's a lot more maneuverability here in terms of cooking in a single oven, milchiks and fleishiks, even at the same time, even uncovered. And that's number one. Number two is the last line in the Gemara. The last line in the Gemara is the source for a halacha that is known by everyone and practiced by everyone. And it's a very precarious halacha. So I want to speak about it, especially now in Erev Rosh Hashanah, I want to speak about it because I think it has a big Musar Askel, which is, Mar Bar Rav Ashi says at the end, this fish that was cooked in the same oven as the meat, you can't even eat it plain. Forget about eating it together with milchiks, you can't eat it at all. Why? It's a problem for Recha, problem for bad breath or being malodorous, and it's a problem for Davacher if it's Arat. This is the source for not eating meat and fish together, and the reason you don't eat meat and fish together is because you're afraid of bad breath or malodorous, and Sarat. So that's number one. Number two is, it's pretty clear here from the Gemara that the problem is cooking them together or roasting them together, not necessarily eating them together. All right, now, I'm just going to do it for the sake of brevity. I'm going to just read you from the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan in Kuftet Zayin summarizes the shitot here in the Sif Yud. He says, you have to be careful not to eat meat and fish together. It's a problem of Sarat. So anybody who doesn't eat them together, it's because you're a problem of tzarat. Vein chiluk ben basar beimel basarof. No difference between meat or fowl. Chenin litzlot basarim dag betanur katan. You can't roast them together in a small oven. Kechad mishum recha, because of the reach. Miavi bedieved eino asur. Bedieved, it's not a problem. Dulo havi sakana. It's not really a danger. Rak derech bishul, Well, if you cook them together, is it a real sakana? If there's fat that moves back and forth, it's problematic. Some people say by roasting the chatzkila you can do it. The Ramah says that b'di'evet it's fine. You have to wash your hands. You eat some soaked bread in between. You don't have to worry about it. Rakashimah vashlim yachad. Only if they're cooked together. Vachlan. And he ate them. Oh, nitzlu yachad. Or they were roasted together. The az yesh sakana. And this is the way to get rid of that sakana. Avalachlam zechazeh in lachush. To eat them one after the other. No problem at all. Vikotav rabbeinu rabbah vechein noagim. That's no problem to eat. Meat and fish one after the other. Shloder chot zapev yadai. You don't have to wash your mouth. You don't have to wash your hands. Benem. Mikom makom. Yesh lachol davar benem. Just eat something in between them. Shtot and drink a little bit. Tavik yinuach vadacha. That's what our practice is, to eat something in between, eat bread or hard and drink something. But today, nature has changed. He's quoting the Potosafot from Moed Katan. And so because of that, all of these things don't have any impact at all. He gives other examples of this. And maybe we don't have to worry about this at all. The Taz says it's not even batal b'shishim. Fish and meat is not even batal b'shishim because it's a sakana. Most of the Gdolim argue on him, derak be'eris nachash. Only by the poison of the serpent venom of a snake do we worry about this. There's no flavor, ve'ein b'zeh sakana. Salting them together is not a problem. He brings from the Gemara in Chulin. So you see here the Aruch HaShulchan bringing down the different positions. But I will say, and this is it's pretty clear from the Gemara that the problem here is cooking them together or tzli together. Eating them together is really, it doesn't seem to be the problem. It does move through the halachic process and everybody paskins that eating them together is problematic. You see the Ramah saying eating them one after the other is not really problematic, but he suggests should eat something in between, rinse in between, so that you're not really having them together. We don't have to be so makpid to wash your hands, wash your mouth, that all stuff you don't have to do. So now, here you have something in the Gemara. It's one line in the Gemara. It's extremely precarious. And on top of that, the problem is tzarat. Supposedly a health problem and a tzarat problem, which is very questionable. And despite that, every religious Jew that you know keeps this halacha and doesn't eat fish and meat together. Now, my point being is that on Erev Rosh Hashanah, we see the power, first of all, of Mesorah, that we grew up in homes, and that was the practice there, and everybody practices it. Nobody really knows the source. Nobody knows how precarious the source is for this item. Everybody keeps the halacha. So then, based on that, I just say, coming to Rosh Hashanah, that if we, with such a precarious source, are so good at keeping the halacha, there are many halachot that we have the opportunity to keep that are well-founded, well-based, and have significantly more impact, especially in issues like Ben Adam Lechaviro, our fellow Jews, if we can keep such a halacha like this, and nobody questions, and nobody's turning it upside down, and everybody does it, then in other areas that we should have that same deference to the halacha, especially when it's well-founded and well-based, give the halacha in areas that are very important, whether it's Ben Adam Lemakom, but even more importantly, Ben Adam Lechaviro. That's just a little musa that we take away from this halacha going into Rosh Hashanah. Alright, the Gemara, Chamisha Dvarim Bayim Bituma. There are five items that are brought Bituma, Veinam Nechalim Bituma. But even though they're brought Bituma, you can't eat them. Haomer, Shtei Alechem, Lechem Apanim, Zivchei Shami Tzibur, Surei Roshei Chodashim. So these are all items that are Karanei Tzibur, that are brought even Bituma, but despite the fact that they're brought Bituma, they're not eaten, because these are Karanei Tzibur that are eaten. I mean, there are certain Karanei Tzibur, like Olot, that aren't eaten, so it's not relevant. But over here, these are items that would be otherwise eaten. The Omer, the Shtei Alechem, the Lechem Apanim, the Shlamim, Zivchei Shami Tzumor, the only Shlamim of Tzibur are the Kibsei Atzeret, the Kvasim that are brought on Shavuot, Usirei Rosh Chodeshim, which are the Sirei Chatat of Rosh Chodesh. HaPesach Shabbat B'tumah is exception because it's Ne'achal B'tumah. It's brought B'tumah and eaten B'tumah, Shalobah Mitchilato El Achila. The whole purpose of the Garden Pesach is to eat it. So what's the purpose of bringing it B'tumah unless you can eat it? And therefore, there is a dispensation to eat it as well. Chamisha limutei mai. Five comes to exclude what? Limutei chagigat chamisha atzar. It comes to exclude the chagiga that you bring on the 15th. The sagadat chamina came into carbon tzibur. Since it has a din of carbon tzibur, it's not really a carbon tzibur. Chagigat chamisha atzar is brought by every individual. It's a chagiga. So what do you mean it's a carbon tzibur? This we mentioned before in Rashi. Rashi says, afagav dechol yachiv yachiv mechayev, garilei carbon tzibur, mishud da'ati beknufaya. It's brought in the multitude. Everybody's doing the same thing at the same time. That makes as if it's a garban tzibur. It's the answer the Gemara gives in the Gemara in Yuma, in second Yuma, the garbei carbon pesach. Why is it called a carbon tzibur? It's because everybody's doing the same thing at the same time, so that you can see that when individuals, all individually, have the same experience or same thing, it makes them into a tzibur by definition, even though they're not corporate entity and bringing one korban. Nevertheless, even though they're bringing individual korbanot, they're considered to be a single entity because they're all doing the same thing at the same time. So the chaliyat, chamisha, is there, since the garment sibor, the kviyale moed, and it's brought on the moed, tidchei tumah, it should override tumah. Mashmalan, kevin ditle tashlumim kol shiva, since you can make it up all 7 days, lo dachya shabbat, it doesn't override shabbat, mundishabbat lo dachya tumah. If it doesn't override shabbat, it's not going to override tumah because there's an alternative. When you don't have an alternative, when it's the only time to bring it, and it's a korban tzibur, kavula zman, korban tzibur, then you can bring it bitumah, and you can bring it on Shabbat. So nitnei nami sirei regalim, what happened to the korbanei chataot of the musafim on the holidays? We only mentioned the seirim of Rosh Chodesh. What happened to the seirim of the regalim? Hatanele zivchei shami tzibur. That was already captured in the zivchei shami tzibur. Yochi, if it's captured there, sirei Rosh Chodeshim, nami lo dinnei. Then by Rosh Chodesh also, why are you writing it? Da'atana zivchei shami tzibur. It's already captured by zivchei shami tzibur. Imre sirei Rosh Chodeshim itzrichalei. Now the sirei Rosh Chodesh, we need it. Salkadat chamina halok tibu moed. We would have thought they don't have the word moed. Now moed is a key word here because bib moado. Bib moado means in its time. Bib moado means you bring it in its time, irrespective of Shabbat, irrespective of Tumah. That's what overrides over here. That's why it's moado. Since Rosh Chodesh is not called a moed, I would have thought that the Sirim Rosh Chodesh don't have that ability to override Shabbat or override Tumah. Kamash Malon, the Rosh Chodesh Yikrei Moed. Kamash Malon is that Rosh Chodesh does have a status of Moed, Kida Abaye, like the dinner of Abaye, Damar Abaye. Tammuz, Dai Shata, Malyuhi, Malyuhi. The Tammuz of that year was a Malay, Dichtib, because it says, in Echa, Karalai Moed, Lishbor Bachurai. So now I'm going to stop here, even though the Gemara continues, and explain this, and then with this will end, which is that the Gemara in Ta'anit is trying to calculate and prove that the Meraglim came back on Tisha B'Av. And they want to know, the 40 days, based on the Psukim in the Torah, the 40 days that they left would have them coming back on the 10th of Av, and not on the 9th of Av. And the Gemara says, well, it was the 9th of Av, and that's B'chiyah the Dorot, and that's why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed then as well. It's an inauspicious day, the day that was Ra'ui the Proniot, and it's because of that crying that they did in the Midbar. But how do you get it to Tisha B'Av? They don't have 40 days. The answer is that every year, if you remember that when it comes to the 9 days, Rosh Chodesh Av is only one day. And that's because Tammuz is always a chaser. Tammuz always has 29 days in it. Av is a malay. We always have 2 days of Rosh Chodesh Elul. And Elul is always a chaser. So that's the way our calendar works. And Tammuz is always a chaser. So now, what Abaye says is, in that year, they made Tammuz malay. He says, in that year, Tammuz was a malay. And that's why it ended up being Tisha B'Av that year. So the 40 days landed on Tisha B'Av because that year Tammuz had 30 days instead of 29 days. How did he know about that? Because he says, Pasuk in Eicha, this is not the Pshat of the Pasuk. The Pasuk of Pesach was Karelei Moed Lishbor Bachurai, which is that Hashem made it an appointed time to destroy the people. The Moed here is not a Moed like a holiday. Moed means that it was appointed time, like a meeting time or a fixed time when Hashem made it into the time where it destroyed all the people. The people were getting killed. It was like a party of killing all the Jews. The meaning of Moed there is a very negative term. Nevertheless, the way that they interpret it is, Kara alai Moed, I made a Moed, Lishbor Bachurai, to get to the bad day. What was the Kara alai Moed? The Moed was Rosh Chodesh. I made an extra day of Tammuz, so there were 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. That extra day caused that Lishbor Bachurai, caused that Tisha B'Av was the day on which the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, to match up with the 9th of Av, that was when the Meraglim came back. So that's why over here we have a mean that Sirei Rosh Chodeshim do not override Tumah. The answer is that they do have a din of Moed. By the way, the same thing that the Gemara in Arachin discusses with regards to Rosh Chodesh about saying Hallel. Why don't we say Hallel on certain days and do say it on other days? The Gemara talks about the reasons. And one of the things they talk about is Moed. They say, well, Rosh Chodesh is also called the Moed based on this memra of Abaye. And then the Gemara says, well, you need Yisur Malach as well. So then Rosh Chodesh gets dropped out, and that's why we don't say Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. We say Chatzi Hallel, which is a minog, but that's not the Ikar Adin. But this same Malach, that idea of Moed comes up with regards to Rosh Chodesh in a number of instances, and this is one of them. Okay, we'll stop over here.